It's time for today's quiz. Every year, Forbes produce a list of the world's most powerful people. And last year's list had 75 names on it. Now, Gwyn is going to show a slide with the top five people, but with their names blacked out. And I wonder, can you tell me last year's five most powerful people, according to Forbes? Yes, Putin for Russia. Is it what? Something like that, yeah. It's a slightly racist comment, Mike, but we'll let it go. Trump is there, yes. Yes, Merkel. Bezos. Yes, you got them all. And apart from the Chinese person who may or may not be something, we can see his name on the next slide. There you go. Jinping. Yeah, there we go. The five most powerful people in the world, according to Forbes. And I tell you, as I looked at this list, there's something that I found a bit disappointing, if I'm honest. 75 names. Not a single member of Lichard Mission. Some of you showed such promise and failed to deliver. I'm very, very disappointed. And some of you in particular, I'm very, very disappointed. Well, I'm not really, actually, because this list doesn't really mean all that much in the grand scheme of things. And in fact, in eternity, it won't really mean anything at all. What really matters is if we know Jesus and if we trust him. Because if we know Jesus and are known by him and trust him, then we have a future that puts us far above the whole Forbes top 75 list of the world's most powerful people in 2018. At least that's what the promise that Jesus gives to the church in Thyatira that we saw this morning in Revelation chapter 2. Gwyn can bring up the words on the screen. We've been looking at different letters that Jesus spoke to different churches in the first century in Asia Minor. And through these letters, Jesus speaks to us here in Lichard Mission, still to all churches everywhere. And each of the letters ends with a promise directed to the one who conquers, the one who keeps going, keeps trusting him in his strength. And the promise that he gives to the church in Thyatira and to us this evening, the one who conquers and who keeps my works until the end, to him I will give authority over the nations, and he will rule them with a rod of iron, as when earthen pots are broken in pieces, even as I myself have received authority from my Father, and I will give him the morning star. And I want us to look at that promise this evening. And as we look at that promise, we'll see something about what real significance looks like. And perhaps something also about what we should do with the rest of our 2019. And to understand this promise, though, we need to turn back to Psalm 2, which is why we had it as a reading early in the service. So if you've closed your Bible, you might want to reopen it. And the reading is behind me on the screen, the page numbers. Psalm 2 is an important psalm, a wonderful psalm, an exciting psalm. And the big message of Psalm 2, the big message of Psalm 2 really is saying the most significant thing you can do in this world, the most significant thing you can do is to take refuge in Jesus. That's the message of Psalm 2. Everything in the psalm leads up to the final verse, which says, "Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish in the way, for his wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are all who take refuge in him." It's where the whole psalm is leading. A psalm that asks the question of where real power lies in our world. Where is real power? Where is real significance? Where is real influence? The first few verses of the psalm, we meet all of these powerful kings and rulers who are keeping themselves very busy. They're raging, they're plotting, they're setting themselves, they're taking counsel together. They're all keeping themselves busy trying to put themselves at the top of the Forbes most powerful list, or whatever the equivalent was at the time. They want to be at the top, and they want to be at the top above God and above God's king. Because all of these kings and rulers are coming together to set themselves against the end of verse 2, against the Lord and against his anointed, against his chosen king. They want to be free from the rule and the authority of God. They say, let's burst their bonds apart. Let's be free from that rule. Let's put ourselves at the top. These powerful kings who want to establish their influence and their significance even above God. And for God's people, in the middle of all of this, you look around and you see all of these powerful, significant, influential kings and rulers and other powerful people that we have in the world today. And it can all seem a bit scary, all of these powerful people all coming together to oppose God and his people. And it can seem a bit scary and a bit overwhelming as we look around. But then the psalm points us to look up into heaven. And as we look up into heaven, we see that the Lord is not really all that worried by all of this raging and all of this plotting by these kings and rulers and nations. He's not worried at all. Verse 4, what he's doing, he's sitting and he laughs. There's no emergency cobra meeting in heaven as he sees all of these kings coming together. There's no panicked stockpiling of resources in case of a no-deal scenario. There's no secret plan to find a hiding place if things go wrong, as has been revealed is happening to our royal family. But he just is there. He sits. And he laughs. He's not scared. He's not worried by what he sees, this raging and this plotting and this counselling together. And the sitting and the laughing, there's a finality to this Lord's words and to his plans and to his purposes and to his acts. That what he says is final. What he establishes is done. And there's nothing that can change it. There's nothing that can go against it. Nothing that can affect it. This one who sits in the heavens and laughs then speaks to these raging, plotting, powerful kings and says, well, as for me, I've set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I have established my king. I have chosen my king. And he is the king. He is the king. The king above all kings, the king of kings, the king that really matters, the king that has real significance and power and influence. Verses 8 and 9, we get the king, the anointed one, speaking of the promise that's been made to him. And what's the promise? Well, I'll make the nations your heritage. These nations that are raging and plotting, well, they'll belong to this king. They'll be under him. The ends of the earth, your possession, the whole earth, under this one king. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. All of that opposition that may have looked so powerful and busy and active and influential will be crushed and ended and gone. This king, the king established from heaven, this is the king that matters. This is a king that has real power and significance and influence. And the king that it's pointing to, this psalm, is pointing us to Jesus Christ. Christ means the anointed one. This is Jesus Christ who's being spoken of. And this psalm, Psalm 2, is quoted a lot of times in the New Testament, a lot of times, to show us how Jesus is the one that this psalm is looking forward to and speaking of. And you think of a time in Jesus' life on this earth where lots of people were plotting and raging against him, when Herod and Pontius Pilate and Gentiles and Jews were coming together to oppose this king, King Jesus, King of the Jews, and wanting to kill him. And they did kill him. What they hadn't planned on was that he rose again from the dead, which affected their plot somewhat. That this king that they killed, he rose again from the dead, and having risen from the dead, rose into heaven, ascended into heaven, is now sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, in the words of Hebrews chapter 1. And the Father says to the Son, this king, the anointed one, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet. Sit at my right hand until the nations are your heritage, the ends of the earth your possession, that they're broken with a rod of iron and dashed in pieces like a potter's vessel. Jesus Christ is the king that really matters, the king with real power and influence and significance. And all of this plotting, all of this raging, all of this planning will come to nothing. It will be seen to be futile and vain and with no real fruit. All the plotting of these kings will be shown to be futile. That doesn't mean that the lives of those kings you're plotting needs to end in futility, because there's a promise, an invitation that comes even to those kings you've been plotting, even to the nations you've been opposing this king. In verse 10, the kings and the rulers are spoken to, they're warned, they're told what it would mean to be wise, what's the wise thing to do. And they're told, kiss the Son. Kiss the Son, this king, this Jesus. You think of someone bowing before royalty and kissing the hand, that kind of kiss, not a romantic kiss. It's that kind of kiss of honour and respect to royalty. They're invited, they're called, they're instructed to kiss the Son and to take refuge in him and to find blessing. Even the kings who've been plotting and raging, they're invited to come and take refuge and find blessing. That's the most significant thing they could do as kings on this earth. Very significant thing, not all of that plotting, not all of that raging, not all of that taking counsel and setting themselves up, but to take refuge in the Son and find blessing in him. What's true of the kings here in the psalm is not just true of kings and rulers and people on the Forbes list of the most powerful people in the world, but it's for all of us that these words are addressed, really, because all of us are a bit like these kings in Psalm 2. And the history of humanity has been the history of people building our own little kingdoms without God, building our own little kingdoms with ourselves being in charge, our little kingdoms where I'm in charge and what matters is my success and my reputation. And I want things to happen in my way. And maybe if I'm feeling religious, God might have a bit of a look in, but really it's my kingdom. That's how humanity has lived. That's the way we naturally find ourselves living, building our own kingdoms marked by sin and opposition to God and rebellion against him, wanting to be free of his right and good rule over this world that's his. And we can do very well in our own little kingdoms, and we can be successful, and we can be popular, and we can achieve a lot. But if we're opposing God, we won't come out on top. We won't ultimately succeed. Instead, what we'll find is that we'll face these realities of verse 12, of the anger, the perishing, and the wrath, the right anger of this true king,
against all who oppose him, who reject him, who want to be free from him, who want nothing to do with him. And our only hope
of something other than wrath
is to come and take refuge in Jesus, to come and take refuge in this true king,
the one who invites rebels into his kingdom. That's what his death in Jerusalem on the cross was all about, securing a place for his people in his kingdom,
even that though we've opposed him and rejected him and wanted to live without him, that he calls us to come to take refuge in him. He calls us to find a place in his kingdom. He calls us to find blessing in him. And that's the most significant thing that we can do in this world, is to take refuge in the Son. And if you are here this evening, we're all people who come to church, but the significant thing is, have you come to Jesus and have you found refuge in him? Have you known the blessing of coming to him? Have you kissed the Son? Have you come and submitted to him as king? Have you come saying to him, Jesus, you are the real king. I'm just a pretender. I've just been trying to be something that I'm not. Jesus, you are king. Help me to live with you as king. Please forgive all of my sin and all of my foolishness. Help me to live with you as king. Have you come to him? Have you kissed the Son? Have you taken refuge in him? That's the most important thing. And if you have
come to him, if you have taken refuge in the Son,
well, then we need to keep remembering this perspective on the world that the Psalm gives us,
of where real power and authority and influence lies in this world. Not with all of the people who look really powerful, and not with the Forbes top 75 most powerful people, but with this real king. And that's what really matters. He's the king that matters. And what really matters for us is to take refuge in him, the most significant thing that we can do in this world.
But the really exciting thing I want us to think about this evening, I should probably rephrase that, actually. Those are some exciting things I want us to think about. Here's another exciting thing. This is all exciting. That although we don't deserve anything, we deserve to face wrath. Yet here we can find refuge in Jesus. That's exciting. But here's something more. But as we come and find refuge in King Jesus, we see that this place of refuge is a place of honour. A place of refuge is a place of high honour. Because the words that are spoken of Jesus in Psalm 2, we find that they're amazingly spoken of believers in Revelation 2. Gwyn can put up some words from Revelation 2 again. Keep your finger or thumb in Psalm 2. This is the promise that Jesus gives to that church in Thyatira and to us as we trust him. The one who conquers and who keeps my works until the end, to him I'll give authority over the nations. But that's what's true of Jesus in Psalm 2. He's the one who has the nations as his heritage, who's given that authority over the nations who are plotting and raging. The promise in Revelation 2 goes on. The one who conquers will rule them with a rod of iron, as when earthen pots are broken in pieces. And that's what's said of the Son of Jesus in Psalm 2, that he will break his opponents with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Then Jesus says that this authority that he's received from his Father, he shares with his people. And even that title, the morning star, we've sung about it at least twice this evening, perhaps more. The morning star, a title that's given to Jesus to show his royal authority. You get it at the end of Revelation, you get it elsewhere as well. But here, Jesus gives the morning star to his people. But as we come and take refuge in Jesus, he doesn't trample us down under his feet and keep us down.
But he lifts us up. He lifts us up. And so high up, far above the whole Forbes top 75 most powerful people, really high, he lifts us as we come and take refuge in him and find this place of refuge as a place of honour. If we're believers, if we're trusting Jesus, then a phrase that the New Testament uses to describe us, it says that we're in Christ. Because by faith we are united to him. We are joined to him. We're one with him. We're in him. And he's in us as well. We're in him. We're united to him. And the New Testament describes how we have died with him. How we've been raised with him. How we've been seated with him in the heavenly places. And it also says that we will reign with him. As we're one with Jesus and we follow where he has gone ahead of us, we die with him, we rise with him, we are seated with him in the heavenly places, and then we will reign with him. And Gwyn can put an exciting few verses on the screen where Paul says to Timothy this very thing. If we have died with him, we will also live with him. And if we endure, as we conquer, we will reign with him. But Jesus shares his glorious reign with his people. And in Revelation 22, part of that glorious picture that we get of the new heavens and the new earth, the restored eternal home of God's people forever and ever. And we get this picture of perfection, and there's no death, there's just life and everything good. And then we're told of God's people in Revelation 22, verse 5, they will reign forever and ever. So we find refuge in Jesus. That's where he takes us, to reign forever and ever, to share his reign. His reign over creation. Our eternal home is a new creation, a wonderfully restored new heavens and new earth, a physical, real place, and where we'll have the place of honour that we were created to have in this world, that we were given authority. But we made a mess of our calling under God, our calling as his people made in his image. In that glorious new creation, we'll be restored to a place of honour and blessing, and we'll reign. But also sharing in his reign over his enemies. Those who persist in opposing God and God's anointed and God's purposes and God's people will be judged. We'll be judged with eternal judgment. We'll face the fullness of his anger against their rebellion. And they will be, in the words of Psalm 2, they will be shattered and broken. And God's people will be free from their raging and their plotting forever. We'll be free from all of that opposition and all of that raging and plotting against God forever and ever. And we will reign forever and ever, a place of honour forever and ever. One of the things that our great and awesome God loves to do is to take little people. I don't mean like short people, short people as well. But to take kind of small, insignificant people, not much in the world's eyes, to take those kind of insignificant people like us, to lift us up, to enjoy a place of honour. Gwyn can put Psalm 113, or part thereof, on the screen. It's a wonderful psalm where the psalmist says, well, who is like the Lord our God? Who's like him? Who's seated on high, looks far down on the heavens and the earth. There's something unique and special about this Lord our God, that there's no one like him. The one who looks down from heaven, and he reaches down and lifts people up. He raises the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap And he makes them sit with the princes of his people. And throughout the Bible, you see God doing this exact thing again and again, that he reaches down and he lifts up the humble and the lonely and the insignificant in the world's eyes, and he gives them a place of honor. And that's what Jesus is promising for us here in Revelation chapter 2. Thyatira, this city that these words were first spoken to, it was the smallest of all the places of these seven recipients of these letters. It was the smallest place. And that may mean that it was the smallest church. They may have been a small church. They may have felt very small and insignificant. But Jesus says, you'll be lifted up to enjoy this honor, to share in my reign forever and ever. And he says to us in Literate Mission, your reign forever and ever. We find refuge in the Son. It's a place of honor, a high honor. He shares his reign with us. He's such a generous king. We who've opposed him and rejected him and rebelled against him, we who still don't follow him as we should do, yet this is the promise he makes to us here, Lichard Mission, us small people. This promise, wonderful promise. And what all this means for us is, if this is our future, if this is where we're heading, if this is the promise he gives us, if this is our destiny, then it means I don't need to build my own little kingdom now. I don't need to build my own little kingdom now. That's the kind of tendency we have as humans, that we spend our time and our energy and our money trying to make ourselves significant and to build our own little kingdoms. And so we make ourselves significant by being successful, by being comfortable, by trying to control things in our lives, by trying to get approval from people so that they think highly of us. And even as Christians, we can know the joy of the kingdom of King Jesus, but we can want our own little kingdom as a kind of backup on the side. We want something else as well. But if this is our future, and Jesus says to us, well, find your place in his kingdom. That's what matters. Find your place in his kingdom. That's the place to invest our time and our money and our energy into that kingdom that really matters, that kingdom that's significant. We don't need to build our own little kingdom of me. We can invest our lives in living for Jesus and his kingdom, to invest our lives in serving him, in serving his people, in sharing the good news of his kingdom with those around us. And even if it affects the things that I can achieve because of how I'm using my time, and if it affects my comfort because I go out of my way to serve others, and if it affects my bank balance because I give money to the work of the gospel rather than keeping it for myself, well, I'm still investing in the kingdom that has real significance, the future that really matters, the king who really matters. That means we can focus on praying for his kingdom to be built, to pray for his people, not just ourselves, but others too. And to not just pray for ourselves, but to pray for those who don't yet know this king, that they would come to take refuge in him. And all of this is just a very long way of saying, don't worry if you're not on the Forbes list of the 75 most powerful people in the world. Don't worry about that. You don't need to worry. You don't need to worry if you never find yourself in any kind of list like that, if you never get to an OBE or CBE or any kind of recognition like that. It doesn't really matter. In eternity, those things won't mean anything. Don't worry about that Forbes list. Kiss the Son, Take refuge in him. Live for his kingdom. That's what really matters. That's where real significance is. That's where the future is brightest. In the one who gives us the morning star. Kiss the sun, live for him and his kingdom. Amen.